Healthy-ish is recorded live from Lankford Studios in Cedar Hill, Texas. Welcome to Healthy-ish, an educational podcast that navigates love, life, and everything in between. I'm your co-host, Prissy, and together I will be joined with Dr. Key, a relationship intelligence expert. Join us as we tackle some very controversial topics and stories. Due to some of the sensitive discussions regarding relationships and domestic violence, we advise listeners to use caution while listening.
Do all people agree that their lives matter? You know, should they have some desire to live? You know, and let me go on record and saying, hey, we're talking about the police brutality. We're talking about the unjustified killings in the police departments. And you can't talk about that without talking about, I mean, you can, but is it fair is the question of today. Is it healthy to talk about the unjustified killings and unmerciful killings within the police department and not talk about the unmerciful killings within our cultures and how we're perceived, and does that play a role? I know people are going to hate. People are going to hate on you.
Right.
People are going to be jealous of you. I mean, that goes without saying. Regardless of who you are, you can be the same race and you'll have those situations, right? Mm-hmm. So those things exist. This is my specialty. This is why I want to talk about healthy mindsets, because I can't tell my children, my clients, to expect anything. And this is my age-old mantra. Don't be a nickel looking for a dime. You know what that means? That's like Jennings, right? That we always highlight R&B song. Like Jennings says, hey, must be nice, you know, to have someone to be there for you, to do those things that you want them to do. He's very colorful in painting a picture of a candid relationship, a wonderful relationship, and some of the things that people want, you know, desire. But then, so you have that, and then you have this song he shares, that you have to be careful now, trying not to be looking for something that you're not willing to give, because it's really, you know, in sociology, unrealistic to expect something that you're not willing to give. Unrealistic to think somebody of you than you think of yourself. Treat you better than you treat yourself. Who's in the microwave, honey? And so, in light of all the discussion and accountability, I certainly don't want us to exclude anyone. I want us all to be inclusive in being responsible and accountable when it comes to treating ourselves right, treating one another right, and not mistreating being mistreated. So let me ask you, because every scenario is different, obviously, do you think that the way the African-American culture treats itself has anything to do with some of, not all, because we already know the hatred and the racism is there.
Right.
But do you think that that contributes to the lack of respect that's given to the culture?
I mean, I think so. I mean, there's a lot of, it's like almost like we don't see us in a way, in terms of how we are as people, how we even treat ourselves or how we treat other people. So I think it does contribute. You know, I don't know how much exactly, but I mean, I feel like it does.
It's this thing. I saw a girl today walking across the street, cheeks out, butt cheeks out, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but you want respect.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that say she deserves respect. And I get that. I agree with mm-hmm. her. She does deserve respect. But is her attire saying that she wants respect?
Right.
Is it? I'm asking.
Right. So there's two sides to the coin on this mm-hmm. one, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think one of it is depending on your audience, right? So if you're asking about, you know, rape culture, right? The question becomes, is that, is it okay for her to wear that and for anyone to think that she should be sexually assaulted? You know, and of course, the answer would be, of course not, right?
Absolutely.
But at the same time, the other side of the coin could be, you know, what about her attire though? What mm-hmm. is her attire?
Same.
What expression is she, or what impression mm-hmm. is she hoping to give mm-hmm. to anybody else? You know, because you're making a mess. You're actually creating a message. You know, you're making a statement, you know, depending on how you look, you know, what you dress and, you know, where you do your hair, I believe, you know, shoes that you wear. I believe that fully. I even tell my oldest that all the time, that whenever she wears clothes and she picks out her own clothes, of course, and I have that conversation with her and I tell her, I said, you know, you're making a statement, you know, when you do your hair a certain way, your clothing, your shoes, everything. You know, if you leave the house sloppy, you know, you might be sending a message that you don't care about how you look. You know, you don't care about your presentation at that moment in time. Mm-hmm. You know, so always know, you know, sometimes you don't think about those things. We just in the moment, you know, but it's important, you know, outward appearances. I teach my kids, it's really, really important. And so, you know, in the example that you're giving, I mean, you know, if, of course, you know, there's always that, those two coins, you know, and so it's certainly not appropriate for me. I wouldn't dress like that. I never actually did. Just because I just knew, you know, I think I thought about it in that way, is I don't want that type of attention.
Right. And perhaps you would talk that way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That may have been something that you were taught. And I'm not necessarily sure that everybody's taught that way, right? Mm-hmm. So,
well, you know, I really think that, I don't know if it was directly taught to me or if it just kind of bore out of something else, really, you know, because it's because we were kind of more of a conservative family. And so, you know, there really wasn't these thoughts of dressing in certain kind of ways, you know. So what I'm saying is that I really wasn't free to express myself in my clothing, if that makes sense. So I didn't really get those ideas, you know, but we do live in a culture, I feel like, and I think I've seen it today. Whereas you see a lot of millennials having children now, and I'm a millennial. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of them, by conversing with some of my friends or peers, that, you know, they want their kids to be able to freely express themselves, you mm-hmm. know, which is not something that I recall growing up in my family. But, you know, when it comes to their hair, when it comes to the way they wear their hair and the clothing mm-hmm. that they wear, I recognize that there's a lot more freedom there. I know we're getting off topic, but
no,
you know,
it's
there's
okay.
Okay, so I just noticed that there is a lot more freedom there to be more expressive, you know. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like, and I could be wrong, it's just my opinion, that also leads somewhere. It leads down a path, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're taking one step after the other, and then before you know it, it leads someplace else that we really didn't want it to go there in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you kind of have to set that standard maybe in the beginning. And then maybe when they become of age, you know, then that's kind of mm-hmm. where they kind of begin to kind of, you know, branch out, I guess, and explore. But I feel like whenever they're young, you know, that teaching stays with them at least, you know, you at least mm-hmm. grow with that, you know. So I think there's a lot of it, you know, like you mentioned, that the teaching and the principles that you're kind of giving early on, you know, they do kind of bear its weight in that.
Right. And so this is that full circle topic. So anytime So if I have like a fruit, a piece of fruit, and there's a piece of something on it that's not, is rot or looking like it's about to decay, excuse me. If I don't cut that off, it's going to affect everything. And if I don't cut both sides of it off, if it's on both sides, I just cut one side of it off, is it still going to decay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. And this is why it's so important for us to talk about all sides of the situation. We can't afford to leave anybody out in terms of accountability
mm-hmm.
when it comes to being responsible. Everybody has some responsibility in where we are today as a society. We cannot just blame one group of people. Obviously, we can for slavery.
Right.
I agree, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the racism. We can blame one group of people, but not everybody in that group. Mm-hmm. But there are some people that hold that power and refuse to relinquish it, and they use it to hurt other people. Those people exist. And my opinion is the shoot to kill policy is a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
The death penalty is a part of that. So, I mean, we want to change things. Let's get rid of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I have done something for you to shoot me, why have to kill me? I've asked officers over and over, why shoot to kill? Mm-hmm. They can't give me an answer except that's how we train.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we train. So why kill me? You know, because it makes for a lawsuit, because it gives your side of the story different than my side. It's really, for the most part, the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reality is officers, especially if they don't have the ability to withstand some of the toughness, it's some tough stuff out there. I don't want to even go into. I wouldn't encourage anybody. I've taught and worked in law enforcement or criminal justice, I should say, 20 years or more. And I wouldn't want to fool with some of these people if they're on those drugs and mm-hmm. I don't care what race they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're dangerous.
Right.
It is not uncommon for the people to say in class they didn't have no idea where they were.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So to put all the responsibility on the officers, mm-hmm. I think, on a case-by-case basis, of course. It didn't have anything to do with George Floyd's case. This man was out of control. He was a monster. He had lost it on his knee. So Chauvin was a monster. He wasn't an officer. He wasn't serving. He wasn't keeping the public safe. None of those things when he did what he did. Aubrey, those guys walking, seeing him walk through houses and then gonna fight him. They are totally out of order. You report it, you tell the description of what he has on, and you follow him where he's going, tell the police where he went. You can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have the right to go and detain anybody or fight them, shoot them. You don't have the right to do that. So all cases are so different.
Right.
But when there are cases where I'm literally wrong for doing something and I won't comply, right? So I am wrong. I won't comply with the consequences. And I take your weapons off your uniform. What exactly am I expecting to happen in the end?
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm inebriated, I'm drunk, but I mean, I've had 30 minutes to talk to the officers or so. Obviously, officers are wrong because they shot him in the back. He's dead, but we still got 4 children fatherless. So who actually lost the most?
I mean, honestly, it's the victim. If you think about it, the victim's family.
That's exactly right. So, I mean, you know, it behooves us not to stop talking about what we need to do to be accountable to ourselves, because we still lose ultimately, even if the officers are fired.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the police department gets a lawsuit. We still lose, because if we value the person more than the money, then we have lost. We have not gained.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it forces us to have this conversation. And I was so glad our pastor talked about getting dressed,
mm-hmm,
and moving on, because I do think that there's a lot of injustice out there. I do think that there are some things that have to be addressed. And I'm really happy to see all the protesters peacefully going out, consistently, daily, sacrificing, unifying. They're sacrificing their health to go out and make sure that they are standing up for what's right. I think the least we can do as a culture is make sure we're on the up and up and doing the right thing, so that when they are standing up for us, it doesn't appear that we've contributed to the situation escalating.
Right.
To that point. What do you think?
I mean, I think just like what you're saying, is that we need to have the conversation. I agree that it's an uncomfortable one to have, because you know, we don't really want to look at that part, because it's almost like we're somehow, I don't know, maybe undermining the victim in a way, because mm-hmm, the victim is gone, they're deceased, mm-hmm, especially if it's a child, because we have, mm, a lot of instances of police, mm-hmm, brutality with mm-hmm, a person under the age of 18. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, we don't really want to confront that. But the thing is that I think that, and I agree with you, that if we are to move past this, then we're going to have to look at all sides of the coin. We're just going to have to. And, mm-hmm, you know, it's going to mean that we're going to actually have to do the work. You know, this brings up a really interesting, actually, YouTube show that I saw. It's been years now. And it was about Trayvon Martin. And okay, it was nothing about Trayvon Martin and what, anything negative about him, but more so about maybe something that would involve parenting. So, the commentator was just talking about, you know, asking questions, maybe even critical questions were that, you know, why was he walking? You know, why was he not accompanied by a parent? You know, I guess he was, and I don't recall the whole story now, but he was walking from a convenience store. Is that not right? Mm-hmm. Because he had purchased, mm-hmm, the iced tea and the Skittles, you, mm-hmm, know? And so, you know, he brought up a good question, is that why do we allow, you know, our young Black men or young Black boys to walk so much, you know? Mm-hmm. What's the purpose of that? He was walking, he was wearing a hood. I don't know that the weather. I don't know what the weather was. I don't know if it was raining, mm-hmm, you know? So, I can't recall everything, but it reminded me of how we don't really have those discussions. You know, we don't, mm-hmm, really talk about those things. You know, my brother, mm-hmm, he in middle school, he was walking home from school because I think he got sick or something. The nurse, mm-hmm, tried to send him home. But my parents, they at the time lived so far away from the campus that they said, you know, he could just go ahead and walk home. You know, they worked, mm-hmm, far away. Mm-hmm. And we live really close to the school, and on his way home from walking from school, a police came by and stopped him and searched him and everything. Mm-hmm. I guess they thought, mm-hmm, maybe he may have had drugs, or I don't know what it was, but he was only in the eighth grade, you know.
Searched him.
Mm-hmm. And searched him, all because, you know, the school had let him go. They released him to go home because nobody could pick him up. But, you know, that was the one time where you feel like, man, as a parent, I wonder if they feel like we should have really went and got him instead, yeah, of allowing him to have this experience. Because now what that does is, how does that shape your view of law enforcement going forward? You know, what do you think about them? You know, is that a traumatizing experience that you have? How do you, mm-hmm, process that? So, mm-hmm, I mean, there's so many different layers, I feel like, but I think that we got to have the conversation. We got to be able to talk about it. We got to be able to talk about all aspects, and not just only talk about the part that, you know, everybody wants to talk about, you know, just like, who was it in Mesquite, the young man, I can't remember his name, that, they made a call to 911. They said he was breaking into his own car, but he, mm-hmm, was really getting high in his car.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was shot. He did not die miraculously, mm-hmm, but you know, the police officer that shot him got off.
Black guy, right? Too.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. he was a black guy at that, you know. So, you know, one of the questions that I had was, why was he in his car getting high, you know? And mm-hmm. I think it was like in a parking lot or something like mm-hmm. that. So, you mm-hmm. know, and when I asked that question, I mean, I innocently asked it. The answer that I got, or the response mm-hmm. that I got, was he didn't have to kill him, though. And I'm like, well, right. You're right about it. I mean, I think that's a given, right? We agree, mm-hmm. you know, that mm-hmm. there is just no exception. There's no excuse there, you know, but mm-hmm. we're not really questioning the behavior, right, that comes mm-hmm. before the incident, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you putting yourself in this position, this awkward position, right, mm-hmm. to have some type of unfavorable outcome, you know?
Right.
And I think that we need to have more of those discussions.
I agree. And that's the thing, you know. 16 with a young boy walking is like, what, are you crazy? That's what they do. I mean, that's more common than uncommon. And so mm-hmm. you know, people just asking the question is like, what do you mean? They almost right. grown, right? You know, because we don't consider them as children, right? And I was watching T.I.'s show the other night, and it was talking about how he was taking his daughter. He made a statement on a podcast about he'd take his daughter to the gynecologist to make mm-hmm. sure she doesn't have any sexual relations. And you know, people were like, oh, he's crazy. And he done went overboard and da 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 da. And the girl was just humiliated, you know? Yeah. And these are things, I don't exactly understand what the truth is about the situation. He mm-hmm. said he made a joke about it and it turned into, you know, more than that, but he really does take her to the doctor, mm-hmm. to the gynecologist. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what's up with that? But right. you know, he is a very involved and engaged father. He did not have a father. Mm-hmm. So he knows, I mean, most of his conversation in his show yesterday was about, you know, Monica was saying her sons were wanting her, saying that she was just overly protective. So they said she needs to get away and get out and have some fun. And he was like, you know what they want? If your son is telling you to go and have fun and they want, so they can have some freedom, they trying to have sex. That's all he talks about. But the reality is, it's true. Mm-hmm. If you have freedom and opportunity, mm-hmm. that's what's going to happen. You're gonna, right. I mean, it's just the way it is. The hormones, who's going to stop it?
Right. If,
I mean, you know, I think about myself as a child. Girl, it's unbelievable some of the stuff that we did as children. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's unheard of, some of the stuff that we did in terms of kissing, sneaking boys in, sneaking mm-hmm. out. You know, mamas at work, I had friends that would have relations at my house. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are days where I kissed more than one boy, you know, one, and, you know, just trifling, you know, and I'm thinking that's all because I had time and opportunity.
Right.
And guess what? And this is what's frightening about it. All that happened before I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know how I know? Because by the time I made it to high school, my mom had gotten sick. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't work anymore. So I couldn't do any of those things that I had been doing.
That saved you.
It saved me. Her being sick saved me. That's sad. But it, because it made her stay home more.
Right.
And so with all that being said, I just don't want us to miss up this great opportunity to make sure we're better,
right,
as a people and more accountable. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us are not, because I don't know if we even know what accountability looks like on all levels.
Right.
Being an engaged dad, it seems like you're overbearing, you know, right. you're a nuisance, you know, annoying, you know, being an engaged mom,
you know, I mean, his kind is going I don't know the whole inside of that, but it was a strange comment to make. Mm-hmm. And you know, mm-hmm. it strange that he was taking her gynecologist. Gynecologist at the age of 18. Of course, I could get there myself, but I mean, I feel like stuff like that could possibly send a message to people. You
know? Of course.
And my only concern, the way I was looking at it, is in terms of young girls and women, how we see our bodies and mm-hmm. how we feel like they're not ours. You know, like they maybe yeah. belong to other people, that other people own the right. You know, like it kind of gets into this awkward territory. So I don't, you know, I'm like you. I don't really know you know, I think he did kind of say he was just joking or something like that. But it was just, the whole thing was really weird, you know.
So he was joking about the way he does it, but he does do it. He's been taking her since she was 14.
Oh, Jesus. So Keisha, what do you think about that? I mean, do you believe that that's might be okay, you know, in some, and I mean,
so,
I don't know.
So that's what I'm saying. You know, everybody has their style. I think his way of saying, I don't want nobody messing with my baby. So mm-hmm. I want to make sure that she good. Now, most mm-hmm. people say you're supposed to go to a gynecologist and have pap smears at age 14, 15. I never did. I didn't go until I was 21. But mm-hmm. I mean, 20 when I was pregnant with Haley. mm-hmm. So everybody thought I was behind, you know, but mm-hmm. I think that he is doing the best he can as far as what he knows to try and, this, I could be wrong, but to try to safeguard her. So her knowing, my daddy gonna take me to this doctor, so I don't want, I can't do that. You know what I mean? It's like some kind of accountability mm-hmm. again. It's some kind of, but would he do it with his son? No, that's the other side of it, you know. But it's different with a son and a daughter. I mean, you know, we have a beautiful grandson here, and I look at my daughter and I think about how beautiful it is, but I also think about how much responsibility she's left with, because it's Father's Day week. We don't want to leave that out. It's awesome time to congratulate fathers for being sticking around, taking care of their responsibilities. There are a lot that do and do a really good job, but there are some that do not. And it's an enormous responsibility, enormous responsibility in parenting. And I just, and that's a part of my problem, you know. You have these four children. Did you think about them when you start drinking and driving? Did you think about that? You know, I just need us to be a little more responsible if we want to hold other people responsible. You get what I mean? I just need us to do better. I don't need us to continue to point fingers at other people and expect the respect we deserve. You can't expect it, get it that way. You got to be, and like, they're gonna be Emmett Till. You got all these, even Trayvon Martin. I even think that some of the people that are killed by officers, I think that some of them are killed by racism. I think some of them are killed by prejudice and fear. But I also think some of them are killed because they meet so many knuckleheads out there on the street on a daily basis that they think they're all that way. And that's all racist. That's why the guy that was in Mesquite, he was a black cop. Right. And so it's like, man, I'm not gonna, there, the motto of a police officer is to make it home at night. I just want to make it home. So when you have these things that people are, you know, so quick to say you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that, go out there and walk in their shoes and then tell me what you'll do. That's what they ought to do. They ought to let these protesters and people that are so anti-police want to defund. I don't want to live in no city. You can't call the police.
But you know what? And to that, I want to say that, you know, prior to all of this, I was talking to a friend. I said, you know, they so quick, you know, and I'm talking about the better part of the Black community. Are they quick to say F the police, right? But as soon as something bad happens, who are they going to call?
Exactly.
They'd be on the phone quick to call the police. And so just imagine the irony in this situation. Not saying that we don't emphasize with other people's pain and the Black community's pain, because we have to live these same struggles as well. But it's just sitting, when you sit back and you observe, mm-hmm. you know, and you see it, it's a very different, you come away with a different perspective mm-hmm. at the end of the day.
You do. And I'm just saying, be fair. You know, don't be biased. Right. Don't be the problem. They're biased. That's what you hate about mm-hmm. them. Don't be like them. And that's what you saw. You saw all races and nationalities out there protesting for rights for African-American men. Now, African-American men mm-hmm. walk right. Don't have all these people out mm-hmm. here getting their eyes shot out. And you want to just steal the food. What do you think is going to happen? You driving drunk over the legal limit. You fall asleep in the line. People going around you. Police wake you up, talk to you, arrest you. You leave. How did you think this was going to end? I actually think it was suicide by cop myself.
Who? Who was that?
Wendy's.
Oh, okay. Now, I haven't really gotten deep into that situation yet. I've only kind of learned about it just a little bit. But what do you think about, you know, Botham Jean? I felt like he was like the poster child, you know, in terms of nothing wrong. Right. I mean, they tried to say marijuana. That was probably the only stain that they could really come up with against Botham. But he was just like I think that's why I was so angry with his death. Because there was literally nothing wrong. Probably the angriest. That's probably the first. I mean, there's other cases like that since then. But I mean, he was just. I mean, what could you really say? You know. Another thing that I want to point out too, I thought about it when I was looking at social media the other day, and you know, looking at Black Lives Matter. I'm like, you know, another thing is that I'm noticing that this trend of. How, and you said it early on in the show, how we mm-hmm. treat each other, right? In terms of within mm-hmm. the Black community, but we're so quick to point out the way law mm-hmm. enforcement treats us. But you know, we have a large rate of Black mm-hmm. women in this mm-hmm. in this country who suffer mm-hmm. domestic violence from mm-hmm. another Black man. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's no hashtag movement on that. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. there's none. And that's kind of where we get into that space of just kind of being like this again, this lack of accountability, this elephant in the room, so to speak, that's the only time we're going to mm-hmm. get outraged is mm-hmm. over that. That's nothing. We're not going to get mm-hmm. outraged over mm-hmm. anything else. You post something about bit classes mm-hmm. or, you know, it's not right to hurt someone that mm-hmm. you love. And how many likes do you get? One or two likes, maybe?
Nope.
You know? But you talk about police brutality, you're going to get 1,000 or racism or this Sonic employee.
Yeah.
you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, I'm not saying it shouldn't be there.
I got it.
Okay. But I feel like there's something we're missing the other part.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'm not really sure where that breakdown is. I want to know if it's the videos, mm-hmm. the visuals, you know, that are there. And mm-hmm. then there are a lot of people that have lost loved ones to the police departments, and they get no answers and no compassion, and so they mm-hmm. rally up, you know, they're like, oh yeah, this is my opportunity to speak on behalf. And then there are a lot of people, there's actually a group in Facebook that talks about people that have lost loved ones and they haven't been unsolved murders, right,
so these people, yes, I saw his post.
Yeah. So these people are even upset. You know, they're like, they don't try to find our victims, culprit, you know, the suspects, or they don't try to find them, you know. So there are a lot of people upset about how the system runs. And I get that. I mean, it does need to be revised. There are a lot of things need to be revised about it. I just want to encourage of us, every nationality, every person that is desiring to see the police department to improve, I want to encourage us also to improve with it. I want us all to become accountable for our behaviors and become what we want to see in those officers.
I want to say, also, I want to point out, it seemed to me that, you know, the group that you're referring to, there's an unsolved murder cases in our area on Facebook. And I more so kind of got the opposite sort of feeling in terms of, I feel more so like people are saying, you know, you're protesting for this, but what about protesting for, you know, our loved ones, you know, that are deceased, and there is no answers, you know? And so I kind of got that more so, you know, it's like, you know, we need to protest for our missing loved ones.
Right.
You know, we need to, we still don't know what happened to you know, our cousin, our uncle, our aunt, you know, and we just go and let that go. You know, we just want to move on, you know, and, but then we want to go protest in the street for some other cause, you know? So, I mean, I, again, you know, those competing interests in a way, you know, I'm seeing both sides of the coin. But like you said, you know, we have to all take accountability, you know, and we have that issue, you know, of just not being as accountable as we can be, not rising to the occasion like we should.
Well, I say it happened at the most inopportune time. I mean, most opportune time. I mean, we were, the world stopped. Everything stopped. Mm-hmm. And then we come alive. We thaw out. We're frozen and we thaw out with a knee on our neck. And that's why everybody's like outraged. You're like, hell no. You know, we just got off lockdown. And here we are.
Did you see the governor telling everybody to stay home? They don't need to go anywhere?
No, when?
That was at 1 o'clock this afternoon, because you know he was trying to address the recent increase in hospitalizations. And I caught a snippet of it in between work, and he was just saying that he wasn't creating an order, but he was more so sound like a demand in a way that if you don't have anywhere to go, there's no, you know, don't go.
You're talking about Governor Abbott?
Be at home. Yes,
oh,
Governor
okay.
Abbott.
No, I didn't see that today. I've been out, speaking of which, I've been out. But, you know, it's necessary, and that's what people are saying. Don't tell me what to do. Give me the authority to say and do what I need to do or want to do. But there are those that we know that if you don't tell them, they're not going to do it. And that's what, and that's how I think our numbers have stayed so low in Dallas County for this long. See, we're just really seeing the grunt of what most cities saw initially, because Clay Jenkins shut it down really quick. And I think that that was a real true love and compassion for all people that he did that for.
Right.
Although businesses suffered tremendously, you know, especially small businesses. And all I'm saying is, in our quest to move forward in life, we just have to develop that healthy-ish thought process. And that healthy-ish thought process is like this. Whatever I think would be good for me on both sides of the coin. So is it shopping and risk losing my, you know, health? Or is it good for me to have a store open and make good money and people come in and risk it? You know, you got to look at it on all sides and say, which is good? Now, there are people that are going to say, I don't really care about what they need to protect themselves when they come in my store. I get that, but there needs to be some compassion on that level also. You know, you should, it's not healthy to not give a damn about nobody else but yourself, is my point. It's just not healthy.
Right.
You're supposed to care about everybody. You're supposed to have the same level of compassion that you want people to have for you. This one-sided, one way of looking at things is not gotten us very far. It gets us to a place. It gives us to one place to another, and then we come to the same point, and now we have to hash it out again. It's like a domestic violence situation. Uh-huh. And you said it, you know, we grow up with siblings fighting each other, you know, and then we go into mm-hmm. relationships when the person is fighting one another, and we want to know what's mm-hmm. wrong. Why? Mm-hmm. I just made a mistake. Why y'all tripping? Why y'all mad at him? He just, you know, pushed me. Well, you should push me all the time as my brother, you know. So mm-hmm. We live in a world of contradictions, and that's why you have to look at things on all sides and say, hey, was I wrong in this? Where do we all mm-hmm. fall, and how should we look at it? I think if we want long-term solutions, that's where it's gonna lie. And right now, mm-hmm. you know, people are tickling me because they're saying, oh, we're doing this as a result of the George Floyd situation. And those are things that have already mm-hmm. been in place. I think you sent me something, someone else sent it to me. I get a lot of messages about things that are going on. Mm-hmm. I think New York mm-hmm. said that they were going to stop the chokehold. The chokehold been stopped since 93. You know what yeah. I mean? Just anything to kind of appease people, to make people feel like, yeah, we're playing the part. So this can blow over.
Right. Right.
I mean,
well, what do you have to say about, you know, because I'm sure the other side of the argument that I've heard is when it comes to these situations, right, you know, it's always, well, if they'd have been white, they would have given them another chance. You
it's
know,
true.
That I think that's like this that's outrage true. That people have, you know, where they're just like, well, if it had been a white man who did
it's
the
true.
Exact same thing, they would have given
it's
him
true.
An opportunity.
I agree.
You know?
It's true. I agree. It's true. I don't doubt it at all. And I use this as an example. When I came home from college, I went in that store and I bought all these suits. Bell's department store in DeSoto, Texas, bought a lot of suits. And it took them a long time to come out to check me out. And I thought they mm-hmm. were being racist. See, it's mm-hmm. and I'm a sociology major, right? In sociology, we mm-hmm. teach there are three paradigms in which you can look at things, you know, sociological mm-hmm. perspectives. And it's a danger to look at things from one perspective all the time, all right? So what mm-hmm. I would do, there are people that are, every time something happens, it's race. It don't have mm-hmm. it may not have anything to do with it, but they're going to say it, right? So right. in this particular instance, it took them a long time to come out of the back. And I was like, what's going on? Y'all not used to a black person mm-hmm. buying a lot of food? And they just, no, ma'am, we're just trying to figure something out. We'll be right with you. Well, by that time, I was pissed off. So I left, told my friend, come on, let's go. And she knew how I was. Because I was the NAACP president and all that. I was real radical. And I walked out, drove across the bridge, 35 bridge, and next thing you know, police behind me. And the officer said, there's someone that has been writing checks in my name. So my name was Common, Keisha Williams. And mm-hmm. the person lived on Acapulco, which was in Dallas. And it wasn't me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't me, but I assumed that it was a race issue, and I got pissed off and I left. Now, mm-hmm. my brother had given me a gun a couple of days before that. Have I told you about this?
I don't think so. This is the first time.
So my brother had given me a gun several days prior because I was actually driving my car my mom had bought me for graduation, and he said, you need a gun, because at this time, it was early 90s, and people were carjacking. So he's like, you need a gun to protect yourself. And I said, I don't want no gun. Well, anyway, he put it in the car. And when those people pulled me over, thank God, 2 days prior, I told him to take that gun out of my car. I said, Jesus is going to have to watch me because he's got me this far. I don't want no gun in my car. Now, they asked to search my car. Now, had I said no, they probably would have anyway, because they thought I was the person waiting to hot check.
Right.
Nevertheless, I didn't. And Caprice was, she worked in criminal justice and I worked in criminal justice. And I mean, our careers would have been put on hold had I let somebody who had no degree decide my fate on how I live. Right?
Right.
So, I jumped to the conclusion that it was a race thing and it wasn't. At that time. Now, I wasn't a fan of Bell's and haven't shopped there since, even though I worked there in Greenville before this incident happened. And because they were just doing their job and they apologized. I wrote a letter and all that kind of stuff. But I'm saying that it was actually a legitimate situation. Now, the second situation I like to refer to is when I was in college going back and forth in that car. I would go back and forth to grad school and I would get tickets because I'd be speeding. And it was a nice car. It was a 300 ZX. And so I would actually go, excuse me, I would drive and Jessica, I'll be right with you. Just hold tight. So yeah, I would just add, I'm sorry about that. I would speed and I would always say it's because I'm black. They pulled me over. I got a nice car. They're not used to people having nice cars, you know, racist, you know, I use all them excuses until I got this letter in the mail that said, according to our records, exceeded the amount of tickets that you can receive. If you receive another ticket, your license will be suspended. Well, then I had to look in the mirror because I was mad. But then I was like, being mad is not going to solve it. Me calling them racist is not going to solve it. So, I mean, in truth be told, I had been let go with warnings many times. So that wasn't it. You know, I was speeding. It wasn't like I was innocent. I was speeding. So what I ended up having to do, what I said I was going to do, I said, I got to do something to slow me down. And so what I came up with is that I pushed my seat back. And it was about 10, maybe 15 years before I got another ticket. Because I pushed my seat back so that when I hit the pedal, when my foot hit the pedal, it would go far, but it wouldn't be going fast. You get what I'm saying? And so that was my internal way of taking care of things. And so all I'm saying to everyone is we have to look within if we want to solve our issues. We cannot continue to blame other people. And that's what I'm encouraging all of us to do. Anyway, Langford Avenue is here. We're starting our Hope Center, helping people. Hope Center, you will call it. Love Center, it's all that. Helping people get their lives together, because that's going to be our way of holding people accountable, helping them find their way, develop their self-respect so that they are able to at least eliminate themselves from contributing to the things escalating to this point. And that's what we're starting. And in addition to that, we're going to do a couple of camps, Zoom camps with children about life skills. And that's going to be coming up, I guess, in August, July, August, to kind of help young people be prepared for life, you know, adulthood. And we talk about those things that unfortunately schools are not teaching now. Parents may not have taught it. And so this is going to be our way of helping deal with the issues so that they can be a dime looking for a dime. They don't have to expect people to be better to them than they are to themselves. And they can't say it's no help available because we are available. And if right. they want to reach well, us, call mm-hmm. us, 214-870-4129. We'll have counselors stand on standby if they need assistance. 214-870-4129 is the number. Lankford Avenue, Lankford Avenue, Avenue, at yahoo.com is our email address. And we welcome all dialogue. We love to hear from you. Love to hear your feedback. We want all things to be well with all people. And that's what we do here with Lankford Avenue, building healthy lives, lifestyles, relationships, and communities.
Okay. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Prissy. It's been great.
Talk with you next
okay.
time.
Okay. Have a good one. Thank you. Always.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'd like to send a special thanks to our supporters and for those listening. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. Have yourself a great day and be sure to join us next time on Healthy-ish. Healthy-ish is proudly supported by Lankford Avenue and the Avenue Proactive Resource Center. For more information, visit our website at www.enddomesticviolenceindallas.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.